accession number 19024, reel 2.
Commander Blunt, reel 2.
Were Admiral Phillips, Captain Leach, Lieutenant Commander Lawson, R&R, the Action Officer of the Watch, Chief Yeoman Howells, the Admiral's Yeoman, and myself. When she started listing with accelerating speed, and it was apparent she was going, we left the compass platform, and it was then every man for himself. The captain and the chief yeoman continued. All five of us went down to the level of the Admiral's Bridge. Captain and the chief yeoman continued below this level, and I did not see of them again. The Admiral, Lawson, and myself climbed out upon the starboard side of the superstructure. The Admiral and Lawson perched upon the starboard pom-pom director sponson. I stood beside it. When the superstructure was virtually horizontal, I thought I saw my chance to get into clear water and head away, and I jumped over to the side of the compass platform. However, I landed ankle deep in water, and in a trice a flood of water washed me back and I think down into the Admiral's Bridge. I bumped around in there, collecting extensive bruising and a cut to my head, but finally, getting a glimmer of light, I managed to swim out and surfaced at my last gasp. I saw the copper punt 50 yards in front and swam to it. When I looked back, the ship had gone. I was the only survivor of the five from the compass platform, unhappily.
Were you a strong swimmer?
Fairly strong swimmer. These events are described in a Lieutenant Commander Brooks' book, Alarm Starboard. He was a sub-lieutenant of the gunroom in Prince of Wales, and he consulted me when preparing his book. The statement in Battleship that Admiral Phillips and his secretary Beardsmore walked hand in hand down the high side is pure sentimental fiction, as is also the patently absurd statement that Phillips never wore a life jacket at sea. Therefore, represent him as some sort of a hero, I suppose. In fact, wearing life belts at sea was mandatory, and Phillips would never have set a personal example of indiscipline. In fact, he was wearing a life jacket, and what's more, he blew it up. This I reported to members of his staff, including the captain of the fleet and the chief of staff, who had remained in Singapore. I'd like to go back to Aurora because of the bearing it has on naval anti-aircraft gunnery. I say I was in charge on the HACP with the band, including prediction of ranges, and on many occasions we got everything dead right, and there should at least have been near misses, but there weren't. This must mean either poor range taking or poor drill in fuse setting at the mountings, neither of which very likely, because it was a well-trained crew, been in commission some time. There was considerable doubt as to whether the function, the fuses functioned properly at that time. I think that is almost certainly the case, that the fuses on anti-aircraft shells at that time were no real good. Fact remains, we never hit anything in the Aurora, though everything was done according to the book. And I say the Prince of Wales, I think the only time she shot an aircraft down was one of her own. So I think really it was a strategic error in sending those capital ships to Singapore without the backup of a carrier. I don't think the appointment of Phillips in command worked out very well. It all goes back to Churchill.
So once you struck out for the craft, what happened to you then?
Oh, I was picked up about 40 minutes later by the destroyer Electra, who unhappily was sunk in the coal seas later.
How did you spend those 40 minutes?
Congratulating myself on being alive. Stoker also told me I was bleeding to death, which wasn't true. I had a cut in my head.
How many people were on the raft with you?
Oh, about five or six. There was a good mixed bag. There was one of the staff commanders, myself, Marine, I think, Stoker. The copper punch, just a little thing you use, the side part you use to clean the waterline of a ship. But it had obviously floated off and all they'd gone.
How did you get aboard the Electra?
Well, they just hauled us in, put down a ladder.
Did they do anything for you once you got
aboard? No, they were dealing with serious cases. I was reckoned not life-saving. So I was all right. A lot of people were very badly impregnated with fuel oil, which is nasty.
What about relations between the crews of the Prince of Wales and the Repulse?
Well, we had very little to do with each other, really. She was a very good ship, I think, the Repulse, from all I hear.
You haven't said anything about the Atlantic Charter. Do you remember
that? Oh, God, I've completely forgotten that. Of course, we took Churchill across to Newfoundland for the historic Atlantic Charter. I'd forgotten that.
What do you remember about that?
I remember having to do a hell of a bloody lot of ciphering. Shook hands with Roosevelt, which was good of him. He received all the officers. Americans gave us a splendid food parcel to send home.
What was in that?
Old cheese and biscuits and stuff.
Do you have much to do with Churchill?
No. Except doing all this bloody ciphering.
Once you got in the Electra, what happened to you then?
Well, we got back to Singapore late evening. And I was disembarked. I was then received an appointment to be secretary to the Rear Admiral Naval Air Stations Malaya, who was on passage. Well, after a little while, the Admiralty occurred to the Admiralty there might not be that job for him, so they told him to get off in Colombo, and someone put two and two together, and I was ordered to go to Colombo. So I was out of Singapore. Oh, reasonable time. I was out the day they withdrew to the island and blew the causeway, and a week before the Japanese started their final attack. I got to Colombo in the American troop ship, the USS West Point.
What were conditions in that like at the time?
Oh, very fine. Very. She was a luxury liner, the America. It was perfectly civilized. And I was not did not serve again at sea. I was in Ceylon. I ended up on the staff of Admiral Leighton, who had by that time been appointed the sort of supremo in Ceylon, in command of all the services and the civil government.
What was your job for Admiral Leighton?
I was on his staff. I was the secretary to his chief of staff, who was a major general. Major general. ISO Playfair, punch contributor under the name of ISOP. Very, very unusual man for an army officer. Very, very clever man.
Was he a wit?
Oh, yes, he was a. Oh, I say he was a punch contributor.
And what was he and Leighton like to work for?
Oh, excellent. I was with Leighton again on his staff when he was Commander-in-Chief Portsmouth. He was a tough old bloke. He wasn't much loved. He knew his business.
Did you ever cross swords with him?
Not yet, no. You know, he accepted me as, I think, being okay. Used to get through flag lieutenants at a rate of about one every 3 months. The only people who could really handle him were his secretary, a Scotsman called Doig, paymaster captain acting, and his Maltese chief steward called Zara. They used to tell him to belt up at intervals. But he was...
Did he accept that?
Yes. He was, I remember he used to go around, he used to like to have a morning hate on Sunday mornings. He used to go around the dockyard and see what he could find at fault with the ships alongside. Then go back to his office, sign a couple of punishment warrants, lead the lesson in church. I reckon he'd had a good day's work. He was a deeply religious man, though well concealed. But he was a very tough, very intelligent old man, too.
Any memories of Japanese threats to Ceylon whilst you were there?
Yes. I was in Colombo when they bombed the island. They blew up the Tenedos. That's an old destroyer that was blown up in Colombo Harbour. And at about that time, two county cruisers, I think the Cornwall and the Dorsetshire, and the aircraft carrier Hermes was sunk by, I think, dive bombers off Trincomalee.
Any memories about that?
No, I was the other side of the island. I'd been told that the commander of one of the cruisers organised things very well. They got the boats and rafts into a circle with the rest of the survivors inside and organised a roaster so that they could all have a spell out of the water and in again. And probably that's minimised the loss of life. It wasn't far off the coast. I believe some actually swam about 5 miles ashore.
What was life like in Ceylon in the second half of the war?
Pretty comfortable.
Any problems with supplies?
No, whiskey was rationed.
Were you there right till VJ Day?
Not till VJ Day, but about VE Day. When I came right back home, just about the end of the European War, and took up an appointment, Portsmouth, where Leighton was then the Commander-in-Chief.
What about your post-war service? Where did you do that?
Oh, well, my first job as in charge as a paymaster was in the fast mine layer Apollo, and she was the best ship I ever served in. She was a lovely ship.
Why so?
Oh, I don't know. People... good captain. Rotten for, no, I won't say that. But also, it was the time of career, and they called up reservists, and people were scared stiff that, you know, these reservists were going to be bowler and needed to be handled with cotton wool. But that wasn't the case at all. They were almost all people who'd been hostilities only ratings. They'd liked the Navy and they'd voluntarily joined the reserve when they left. And they'd had enough of being home with the wife and the twins, and to get called up in a tot of rum and 18 months holiday, they didn't mind at all. They were almost all, several of my petty officers were reservists, and and throughout the ship, they were tower of strength.
What does bolo mean?
Dissatisfied, bolshy. Yeah, I did a spell in the Admiralty. I did a spell shore on the staff in Malta. Then my final seagoing job was the cruiser Gambia. That was quite a good world cruise.
And when did you finish?
Oh, the Gambia. Then after that, I was paymaster in charge at Naval Air Station at Leon Stowland, Hesler Hospital, the base at Londonderry. My final job was paymaster of Whale Island, the gunnery school at Portsmouth. I retired in 1968, age 50.